Now we welcome His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj to read his offering.
Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Devshatarine. This is called meeting my perfect master. Dear Srila Prabhupada, I wish to tell you about my journey to meet you and how your journey to meet me was effective. In my youth, I aspired to attain perfect happiness. And soon I realized that such happiness could not be achieved materially, but only spiritually. And through reading spiritual books, I came to understand that to achieve spiritual perfection, I needed a guru. In fact, I read that I didn't even have to choose the guru. He was already there. All I had to do was find him. So whenever I heard about a guru anywhere, even 1,000 miles away, I would go to meet him. Just wanted to add one small note here. One devotee in England, London, named Ramanuja Das, told his son, Varun, that you're born in ISKCON, and for you to find a bona fide spiritual master, Srila Prabhupada, is not a big thing. But he said of himself that he went through so much agony, you know, meeting so many teachers or so-called teachers before he came to Srila Prabhupada. So he was saying, you shouldn't take it for granted, you know, oh, you just grew up with Srila Prabhupada in your life. Because for many of us, it was quite an arduous journey to come to Srila Prabhupada. So whenever I heard about a guru anywhere, even 1,000 miles away, I would go to meet him. One teacher I met was a Zen master, supposedly enlightened and certified by another enlightened master in Japan. I had read a book that he had written, and when I heard he was holding a 3-day retreat at his ashram in Rochester, New York, I went. Upon my arrival, I found that his students were not very happy. But I thought, anyway, they're just students. Let me meet the master. During the retreat, he held meditation sessions in which everyone had to sit up straight and look at the wall, concentrating on some object. The master walked around with a stick, and if he thought any of us was falling asleep or someone's mind was wandering, he would hit the offender. After one such session, some of his students asked him about his recently having become angry. Quote, "Yes, it is true," he said. "I lost my temper. I shouldn't have." I started to doubt whether he was my guru. Still, I had read that a Zen master might appear ordinary and that one might not recognize him. So I thought, Maybe this is part of it. But my doubt remained. Later, he came to Boston, near Brandeis University, where I was studying. After his talk and demonstration, someone in the audience asked him about Vedanta. Quote, "I have enough trouble keeping up with Zen," he answered. "How do you expect me to know about Vedanta?" My previous doubt was confirmed. He is not my perfect master. Then a hatha yogi came to Brandeis to give a lecture. He had long hair and a beard and flowing robes. He said that by yoga you could attain complete mastery over your bodily functions, including the movements of the bowels. You could actually command your intestines, ascending colon, advance, transverse colon, advance, descending colon, advance, and finally, rectum, pass. I was really looking for a guru, so I thought, anyway, maybe. After the lecture, I tried to meet the Swami, but he was leaving for the airport. I wanted to ride with him in his car, but there was no room, so I rode with some of his students. On the way, they discussed the various foods they missed since they had joined the ashram. I started to have some doubts, but then I thought, anyway, they're just the students. The master may be on a much higher level. When we arrived at the airport, I beheld the Swami. There he was, long flowing hair, beard, draping orange robes, a flower in his hair, a twinkle in his eyes, the very picture of Indian spirituality. But then I saw him tightly embracing his women disciples, and I knew, he is not my perfect master. I have to keep looking. Next, I heard of an quote, enlightened, end quote, psychology professor who was teaching at Antioch College in Ohio, which was known as a progressive university, and I wanted to meet him immediately. Ready to do anything to find my guru, I got in my car and drove the 700 miles. When I arrived, with great anticipation and eagerness, I searched out the professor's office and inquired about him from his secretary. Quote, "He's playing golf," she informed me. "Playing golf?" I asked incredulously. "I thought he was supposed to be enlightened." Quote, "That is his Zen," she replied. "Oh, no. Playing golf. He is not my perfect master." Although I was disappointed about the professor, the Antioch campus was full of people interested in spiritual life, and while I was there, I spoke with some of them. Some students in the student union told me about a guru who had recently visited the campus. "The guru is in the heart," he had said, "where he sits on a lotus flower. You can actually see him and speak with him." Wow, I thought, that sounds attractive. That night I tried to really focus on my heart. And indeed, I got a definite impression that there was a divine personality there, with whom I could have a sublime personal relationship. And he seemed just about to speak. I was very excited, and I became eager to meet him. Back at Brandeis, one of my psychology professors invited Jay Krishnamurti to speak. In all the other cases, I didn't mention the name. Somehow I mentioned this one. I attended the lecture, and during the break, I told my professor that I wanted to meet Krishnamurti. Why? My professor asked. I may want him as my guru, I replied. Oh, he doesn't accept disciples, my professor said. He doesn't even touch money. Sort of, it reminds me of Srila, of course I hadn't met Srila Prabhupada then, but later Srila Prabhupada told about one so-called spiritual master in India, that if someone offered him money, like his hand would curl away in rejection. The Prabhupada said, if someone offers us money, we will take it and use it for Krishna. Oh, he doesn't accept disciples. He doesn't even touch money. My professor was impressed, but I wasn't. I thought, if he's actually able to help people, why should he refuse to take disciples? Just to be renounced? He's not my perfect master. I kept searching. I already had the idea that you don't have to choose your guru, that he is already there. I even had a mental picture of what he looked like. And he didn't have hair. All the swamis and yogis I had encountered had long hair and beards. So I was starting to despair. How am I ever going to meet my guru? Then one day I saw a poster on campus. Lecture. Bhagavad Gita as it is, Swami Bhaktivedanta. My friends and I were supposed to go to the movies that night, but I wanted to attend the lecture instead. When I suggested that, however, one friend in particular got really upset. Why can't you be like other people? All you want to do is see swamis and yogis. And the argument became so intense, I decided not to go. I didn't want to disappoint my friends. So I tried to go along with their idea. But something inside me was impelling me to go to the lecture. Finally I said, let's go to a later show. But first, I have to go to the lecture by the Swami. I promise, he will be the last one I ever go to see. My friends reluctantly came along. And because we had been arguing, we arrived in the auditorium late and missed the lecture. Entering the auditorium, I beheld an elderly Indian gentleman. This is my offering address to Srila Prabhupada. Sitting on a cushion on stage. To the side, a young devotee, Satsvarupa Das, sang into a microphone, and other devotees were dancing in a circle around you. The sound of Satsvarupa's singing was reverberating off the bare brick walls. One by one, students from the audience jumped onto the stage and joined in. I felt like going up too, but I knew my friends wouldn't approve. That would have been too much for them. More students were jumping up and climbing on the stage, joining the circle, dancing. I kept trying to focus my eyes on you, but I couldn't. Your effulgence was too great. When the kirtan ended, one of the devotees announced that they needed a lift to Harvard Square or to Boston. As my friends and I were still going to the movie, and it was at Harvard Square, I invited the devotees to ride with us, and everyone piled into my station wagon. I was driving, and also in the front seat were two ladies. In the back seat were three or four devotees, and in the rear compartment were my friends, and I don't know how many more. I don't think we could have fit anyone else. Satsvarupa was squeezed in the rear with my best friend, Gary. Because of our impersonal readings, my friend was saying that ultimately everything was void. And Satsvarupa was saying, there is no void in the creation of God. But my friend kept insisting, everything is ultimately void. I was overhearing them in the front, and, puffed up as I was, I thought, oh, how silly that they are arguing over this. I thought I had it all figured out. So I turned to the back and announced something I had read in some Zen book. Quote, it is not void, and it is not not void. But to give it a name, we call it the void. I thought I had resolved the whole controversy. But still, they kept arguing. One of the ladies up front with me was Janava. I had been trying to understand all the different paths and philosophies, so I asked her about Zen. Quote, this world seems real, she said, but it is illusory, like images on a movie screen. Now, if you withdraw your consciousness from the screen, you'll find that there is a beam of light. I thought, this is the best explanation I've ever heard, even better than the Zen books. And if you keep following the beam of light back, you come to a point. I thought, wow, this is getting to the void. But then she said, but behind that point there's a projector, and behind the projector there's a person. Then I thought, this philosophy encompasses everything that Zen does and more. Then I asked her about Yogananda, because I'd read Autobiography of a Yogi. She dismissed him out of hand. Oh, he's just a shopkeeper. Whatever you want, he keeps in stock. You want yoga? He'll give you that. Whatever you ask for, he pulls it off the shelf. Then she said, at his ashram in California, he is a Gandhi peace memorial. But Gandhi wasn't a worker for world peace. He was a politician who wanted to drive the British out of India. She just dismissed Yogananda. He doesn't even know who Gandhi is. She is speaking with such authority, I thought. But I sensed that it could not all be coming from her. How is it possible for a girl of only 20 or so to have so much knowledge and speak with such authority? Then I thought, this must be coming from her teacher. I want to meet him. When we got to Harvard Square, I let the devotees out. But as I was about to drive away, I realized that I didn't know how to get in touch with them. How would I meet the guru? I immediately stopped the car, jumped out, and ran after them. I caught up to one, Petit Pavan. I heard he, at least a while ago, he was in Union City, sort of, in the San Francisco Bay Area. When he stopped, Petit Pavan, he turned his head and pointed to the people around us. You see these people, he said? They're all sleepwalkers. They don't know what they're doing or why. They're just conforming. His words were so intriguing and deep. I wanted to hear more. Suddenly, I became aware of the honking of horns all around us. I'd left my car in the middle of the roundabout, and the traffic at Harvard Square was backed up. The honking kept getting louder. I want to meet the Swami, I said. Quick, give me the address. He jotted down the address on a slip of paper and handed it to me. Come at 7 tomorrow night. I could hardly wait. The next evening when I arrived, the small storefront was packed with young people. You, Srila Prabhupada, were sitting on a cushion at the far end. The walls were decorated with exotic paintings, and the aroma of incense filled the air. When you began speaking, I had difficulty understanding what you were saying. You had a thick Bengali accent, and the philosophy was new to me. But I did hear you say that out of many thousands of men, one would seek perfection. We read that last night in the 7th chapter. That's me, I thought. He's talking about me. After the lecture, you called for questions. Someone asked, since everything comes from God or Krishna, does Maya also come from Krishna? You replied that everything comes from Krishna, just like everything comes from the sun. The cloud also comes from the sun, although it covers our vision of the sun. But the sun is never covered by the cloud, only our vision is covered. I was burning to ask my question. I raised my hand. There are so many swamis and yogis, and each recommends a different process of self-realization, and each says that his is the best. So how do I know which is actually the best? You responded, what is your goal? I mean, this was a brilliant answer, because I was asking, like, what's the best means? But the best means will depend on what the goal is, what the end is. What is your goal? Do you want to serve God, or do you want to become God? Yeah, and then how brilliant, how perfect. I was asking about the means, but to determine the best means, we must first establish the end, the goal. Quote, when you seek after God, then God, who is situated within your heart, will give you all facility. But if you want to become God, you will be cheated. You are cheating yourself. How can you become God? You are trying to become God, then how you became a dog? God cannot become a dog. God is always God. The Mayavadi philosopher says that I am God, but by Maya I'm thinking I am not God. So by meditation I shall become God. But that means he is under the punishment of Maya. Maya has come under the influence, God has come under the influence of Maya. How is that? God is great, and if he's under the influence of Maya, then Maya becomes greater than God. So the idea is that as long as we shall continue in this hallucination that I am God, there is no question of getting the favor of God. Then you do your own business. You try to find out whether you are God or something else. As soon as I think I am God, I'm cheating myself. Who will help you? That is going on. Everyone is thinking I am God. So, what you are thinking? You are trying to become God? What is your idea? Are you thinking there is no God? I'm thinking that there is God, I replied. There is God. You are thinking like that? But I knew I couldn't cheat you, so I replied, yes. But I can see that I was trying to become God. So you're trying to become God. That means you're not God. Is it not? How you became not God. God is so great that he never becomes not God. So your conclusion should be that I am not that God who is great. I am a different God who sometimes becomes not God. Therefore, you are a different God from that God who is great. Is it not? That is a fact. Because you are part and parcel of God, you are a minute God. Therefore, you have the potency of becoming not God. Just like a fire and a spark of the fire, a spark, when it is in the fire, is bright fire. But as soon as it goes out of the fire, it becomes extinguished. But the big fire never becomes extinguished. Similarly, you are not that big fire, you are that small spark. You have fallen down. Therefore, you are not God. Now you have to raise yourself again to the fire, and you will again be a blazing spark. So that is the difference. That is stated in the Vedic literature. Every living entity is Brahman, but the supreme Brahman is Krishna. He never becomes not God. We see in Krishna's life, when he was a child on the lap of his mother, he was God. So many demons were killed. He didn't have to meditate to become God. While he was playing, he was God. And when he was fighting on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, he was God. That is God. Not that sometimes not God, sometimes God. That is not God. God is always God in any circumstance. That is God. Now here's the point. As you were speaking, I got the clear impression that you knew everything about me. That you are seeing right into me, into Waltham. That's the town where I had my apartment near the university. Into my apartment. Into my bathroom. Right to the wall on which I had pasted a sign that I had inscribed in beautiful, colorful, ornate lettering. The sign said, "You are God." In case I forgot, I had to remind myself. My search was over. I offered my obeisances. I had found my spiritual master. The devotees put their heads on the floor and offered obeisances. I also kept my head on the floor in surrender for a long time. I felt so glad. I'd finally found my perfect master and wanted to surrender fully. At the same time, I also felt ashamed and humiliated. My abominable desire to become God had been exposed. Everyone there knew that I had wanted to become God. In other words, yes, I bowed down my head and surrendered, but I stayed down for a long time in that mood of surrender and acceptance of Srila Prabhupada. But I was also afraid to look up, because I thought, you know, I'd been exposed, so I thought everyone would be like glaring at me, you know, like, he wanted to become God. So I stayed down for a while. I didn't want to be the focus of too much attention. After some time, I heard the sounds of devotees bringing plates of food, prasad, to their guests. So then something inside prompted me to look up. I expected everyone would be glaring at me, but no. People were blissfully taking prasad, and when they saw me get up, they simply smiled. Moments earlier, when a devotee had offered you, Prabhupada, a large plate of prasadam, you had responded, "I am not God. I cannot eat so much." The prasadam I was given looked just like everything else in the temple, colorful, attractive, and variegated. Because of macrobiotics and other speculations, I never expected such a feast. Where to begin? I picked up what must have been a cauliflower pakora, put it in my mouth, bit into it, and felt an explosion of taste. One by one, I sampled the preparation. Badas, sweet rice, every taste new, incomparable. I thought everything was perfect. The guru, the prasadam, the chanting. I loved the chanting. The devotees had a sign with the Hare Krishna mantra written in Indian style lettering. During the kirtan, I was looking at the letters on the sign, and they started to move, dissolve, form, and unform themselves. This was the kind of indication I had been looking for, and everything told me that you were indeed my spiritual master. From the time you answered my question and I bowed my head, I surrendered. From that first meeting, my whole life's purpose became to bring people to meet you. And I was able to do that for many years. But when you passed away, I wondered, what will be my service now? My whole service had been to bring people to you. Now I understand that you are always present, and that by speaking of you, hearing about you, remembering you, and most significantly by studying your books and following your instructions, by practicing and preaching Krishna consciousness, serving your mission, we can experience your presence. So I can continue doing what I was doing when you were personally present, introducing souls to you, which is what I feel most natural doing. Because I know that somehow or other, if someone comes in touch with you, his life will be successful. Hare Krishna, your eternal humbled servant, Girad Swami. I'd like to add a little postscript. Hearing His Holiness Radhanath Swami's offering about Srila Prabhupada's first meeting with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur and the instructions that he received from his Guru Maharaj then, I reflected that in my first meeting with Srila Prabhupada, other than the instruction that you're not God and you can't become God, there was no specific instruction. But I did get a specific instruction that's very relevant. It just would take a couple of minutes to explain. But after I joined the Boston Temple, Satsvarupa was the editor of Back to Godhead. He was always looking for articles. So I submitted one on the subject of guru. And because of the time it took, you know, between when an article was submitted and when the magazine actually was in print, I had already gone to India. And I was with Srila Prabhupada in Gorakhpur, which is the seat of the Gita Press. And the magazine with my article came. So Srila Prabhupada called me into his room and he said, you know, I've seen your article in Back to Godhead. It's very nice. And you should write. You should take up writing as your first business. And he said a couple of other things. He asked, do you ever think of getting married? And I said, no, except when I see, you know, I see the GBCs are all married. Because I thought, well, they're GBCs, they must be more advanced and they're all married. That was my logic. But if you read the original direction of management in which Prabhupada formed the GBC, he saw two clearly defined functions at that time. The householders would be GBCs and then the sannyasis, they would travel and preach and make recommendations to the GBCs. So I said, no, I don't, except when I see all the GBCs are married. Prabhupada said, you'll never be GBC. And so then he said, you know, that these demands are like itching. He said, not just sex, but all the demands of the senses are like itching. And if you scratch the itch, you might get some temporary relief, but then it'll come back worse. So it's better to tolerate. And not. So he said, you remain brahmachari, and after some time, I will give you sannyas. But the real point here is about the writing. And the last time when I was here, at that time I was staying at Sri Lalita's home, and Vaisheshika Prabhu and Keshav Bhari Das Goswami Maharaj and Ratatvaja Swami Maharaj came to spend some time with me there. And the subject came up about my writing, especially about Srila Prabhupada and Juhu. And they really emphasized that, if I'm to write this book, I really have to give it priority and focus on it, as he did with his book, Our Family Business. So, on this auspicious occasion, I'm glad to report to you and all the others that that book is basically finished. I've selected the images, and Maya Priya has done the cover, and she actually asked me to show it to you. She wanted you to see the cover.
Okay.
So on this auspicious occasion, I pray for the mercy and intelligence and strength to see it through to final completion. And then the next one will be about Boston, meeting Srila Prabhupada in Boston and staying there until I got to go to India. But yeah, thank you for all your encouragement. And
His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj Ki Jai!